I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, folks, pull up a chair. We got a hot, fresh episode of Taking It Outdoors right out of the oven. We welcome into the studio today Billy Pulsifer. You remember Billy. He's contributed to this program many times throughout the years. When we first met him, he was heading up the New York kayak bass fishing operation. Since then, I've learned that he's quite the waterfowler, so I've been inviting him back to pick his brain about waterfowl hunting, and here we are in the middle of the early part of the Canada goose season, so I figured we'd invite Billy into the studio, talk a little duck hunting, mostly early season goose hunting. This morning's broadcast, as always, made possible thanks to Johnston RV Country. 30 years of creating generations of family fun there in Webster, Palmyra, and online at jrvcountry.com. Also, Bentley Brothers Kubota in Brockport and Albion. Save a horse, ride a Kubota. I put you in that chair so you could keep one eye on your truck during the course of this interview, Billy. Good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm good. I just came out of the field and had a pretty good morning.
Yeah, it's not every day you see a truck parked in High Falls in downtown Rochester with layout blinds and decoys loaded in the back of it. I saw you out there trying to stow the good stuff inside, so I put your chair right by the window, and I wanted to thank you for coming in today. So, as I said before, man, I don't have too much experience hunting geese early season. The bulk of my experience is pretty much, during gun season, a whitetail. I'll get out there once the snow's flying around. But my hardcore friends, they're getting after it this time of year. They're bagged. If you don't know, this early goose season is a little different than the regular season in that your bag limit is 15.
15, yep.
15 a day versus 5 during the regular season. I'm a little unclear as to the philosophy behind this. Are we trying to get rid of resident geese?
That's it. Nuisance, they're tearing up people's lawns and they're kind of in the towns. But the problem with that is getting them to get away from those villages where they're safe to come out to the corn. But, they're starting to move finally.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. I really wanted to pick your brain. He showed me a picture from their hunt earlier this morning, and they were getting after it. And a lot of things. Just to start off with, you obviously need your license. That's a no-brainer. But a lot of people don't know. I can't tell you how many times, I've been in on hunts where people have been invited, and they didn't know they needed your federal duck stamp.
You need your federal stamp. That's $25. You can get it pretty much at any sporting goods retailer or the post office. And then the last thing, too, is you actually have to register for HIPS, which is free, but a lot of people don't realize that. And it's all done right online.
If you don't know the HIP he's talking about, I think it stands for Harvest Information
Program. Yep.
And you basically go on to the DEC's website, and they'll ask you probably 15 to 20 questions about your duck hunting experience, your future plans, or waterfowl hunting in general,
exactly.
Really.
Yep.
And you just answer those questions. They'll give you a number. You print it up, and you throw it in your blind bag. And you are all set, and you're all legal. Now, when it comes to goose season in our listening area, we're kind of split between two zones. We got the West Central. That's kind of the northern half of our listening area. And then the bottom half would be the South. And it's a cutoff. The dates can vary in between there. But that's what we're dealing with. And this early season will run through September 25th. Again, the difference is 15 bag limit during this early part of the season. Now, first question I want to ask you. I've experienced a late season hunt. Philosophically, what's different in your approach to hunting this time of year versus when everything's frozen and the snow's fallen?
Well, this time of year is tough because you really have to put the miles on your truck and drive around or have somebody that, be able to hunt different areas. For me, in the early season, if I can't find them right off the bat and somebody else did, we'll just trade hunts. That's kind of the little deal I made this morning. They got cut corn, and it seems like they're going to that. Usually the first fields that are cut for corn are going to be your ticket because it's grain-fed. We just had that cold snap, and now they're really starting to go into that grain. But we got 80s coming this week, so they're going to probably go back towards the cow pastures and hay fields.
All right. Now, will they feed multiple times a day earlier in the year?
Because
it's basically a morning situation later. So
I see them, for example, this week, when we first hit that cold snap, we just started getting the rain coming in. And I was seeing them move at just after 7 to 7:45. And then they'd pretty much shut down. And then right around 2 o'clock, they'd pick back up and move again. And then late in the afternoon, they'll go back to the roosting areas, you know, boat ramps and stuff like that, where they can mill around on the grass. And that's been the early season thing for me this year, is just farm ponds are huge. Water is pretty big. I mean, it was 93 degrees last week at one point. So water is definitely one of those big things.
So, Billy, when we're out scouting and I'm driving around and I see, you know, a cut cornfield, and it's got hundreds of geese in it. So I come back that morning, and the idea is those same birds or other birds are going to see what those birds saw and want to come in on that spot?
During the early season, you're probably hunting. It's probably the same flock that's coming back. For instance, this morning we had 300 birds roughly come through first thing in the morning. We didn't get a shot, and they kind of like circled around and they took off. I'm assuming that they were going back to water, and then about an hour and a half, 2 hours later, they all came back in almost exactly the same order, but in reverse. So we had a flock of 4 or 5 come through first, didn't get a shot, and then we had a single come in. We ended up getting that one. Then we had a big flock, like a real big flock, 50, 60 birds, 2, 3 at a time, and they came through and they circled around, and then we got 7 out of that bunch, and they just kept going, and I think it just in reverse order is what they came through. They got their pattern, and they're sticking to it.
Our guest in studio, waterfowl hunting extraordinaire, I'll call him today. Billy Pulsifer has been kind enough to give us some of his time this morning and coach us up on goose hunting, especially during the early part of this season. You ever get a banded goose this early in the year?
A lot of my friends have. I have not gotten a banded goose ever yet. Just ducks.
That's funny, man. I got a banded goose probably 3-4 years ago. It was during late season, and I was so proud, man. The dog comes back, and we see some jewelry on this goose, right? So I'm excited. I can't wait, man. I get this bird home. I go on the internet. I forget if I went online or called the phone number on there, and you give them your information, you know, and then you wait for the email or the certificate to be mailed back, and I'm thinking, oh my God, my banded goose is going to come from Saskatoon or some far-off place in Canada. I got the thing in Groveland, okay? It was banded 2 years prior in Stanley. So right down 5 and 20, this bird migrated over 2 years. But it's funny, man. I know guys that, you know, hunt for years and don't get a banded goose. And I know guys that have been doing it for 5 or 6 years that look like Mr. T with all the jewelry they have on their lanyards. When it comes to your decoy strategy, because that's wildly important when it comes to goose hunting, what's the philosophical differences between your sets early season versus late?
I don't really think there's too much of a difference as far as the seasons go, but we're always kind of adjusting on the fly, so to speak. Like this morning, we started off facing, you know, back to the wind traditional, and they didn't like it. They were not coming in, so we made a quick turn, and we changed all of our direction of fire and everything, and they were coming in, and they just started piling right in. We opened up the spread quite a bit and gave them room to land. And I think we were kind of bunched up first thing this morning, so it's kind of like just the first flock usually tells a story. The first big flock definitely tells a story, and that's kind of what we went off this morning.
Yeah, it's funny, man. Goose hunting's a tough go at it alone, if only from the equipment standpoint. I mean, the guys that I'm fortunate enough to waterfowl with, you know, they've all been doing it for a lifetime and have collected so much equipment through the years. So it's nothing for us to go out. Granted, we'll have five guys or so, but we're putting out 100, 125 decoys, another 50 silhouettes. I mean, we're out there for 2 hours. Yeah,
the early season, you might not put out that many. My average spread lately has been 30 to 50. And sometimes even smaller than that. If I'm seeing only small flocks, I'll put little small family groups in little areas throughout the field. And then if that works, great. And if it doesn't, we'll just keep adding to it if we can.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. Like to people that are novices, when you're out goose hunting and you know you're trying to act like you know what you're doing, they're saying, "Hey, help us put these out." And you'll set the goose up, and then the decoy, and then somebody will come right behind you and turn it a certain way, move it closer to something. And it took me a while to pick up on it, but you're trying to create or recreate an actual flock there. So if it's that time of year where they're paired up. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to have pairs peppered throughout.
We do 5 to 7 is our go-to right off the bat. And then after that, we kind of, if they're coming in bigger flocks, we'll start bunching them up a little bit, or we'll space them out and make it look like a bigger.
Well, we're going to continue the conversation about early Canada goose season. Our guest in studio is Billy Pulsifer. We've done whitetail hunting, you know, with bow season coming up. We've done 2 weeks in a row of deer hunting, and we've been talking about fishing all summer long because it's been so good. I thought it'd be cool to shift gears and talk about some feathers today. So we continue next right here at Taking It Outdoors on 92.5 WBEE. Hey gang, good morning. Welcome back to Taking It Outdoors, talking a little goose hunting today, maybe get into some ducks. Our guest in studio is Billy Pulsifer. Billy's contributed here to this program for many years, and we're happy to have him back with us this morning. This broadcast made possible thanks to Johnston RV Country, 30 years of creating generations of family fun in Webster, Palmyra, and online at jrvcountry.com. Billy, anybody messed with your blinds yet?
No, I get a couple lookers, but probably never seen it before. They're like, "What's this bucket of corn out here?" I mean, I still got corn husks on the blind, so...
We mentioned it in the beginning of the last segment. Billy came to do the show today directly from the field, so he's got his truck in High Falls loaded down. One time I came to I whacked a deer. This was 2 or 3 years ago. I got a deer on an evening hunt and needed to drop it off at the butcher after I got off work in the winter, and I had a doe gutted out in the back of my Ram down here on High Falls one morning. Oh my God, you should have seen the do-gooders coming unglued. Oh, notes left on my car.
Oh, I'm not surprised at all. If only they knew what was sitting in my blind right now.
That's funny, man. Again, we're trying to point out the subtle differences that can be found when it comes to goose hunting. This is the early season. You know, later in the year, we're more familiar. I think that's when more people will get out there and be waterfowling. But during this early nuisance season, is it fair to call it that?
That's what a lot of people reference it as.
So we're talking about the subtle differences. We talked about the decoy spreads in the last segment and a couple different things, but I want to talk about the calling here. You know, with goose hunting, calling can be so, so important. And then again, I can see where it's been unnecessary at some time. So it's hard to know where you fit in with that. And it's kind of a similar philosophy, as you pointed out, with the spread. You kind of got to let the first couple sets of birds tell you what's going on. But what do you find when it comes to calling early? Versus...
I'm not a good goose caller. I keep it real simple and light. And if they're coming, they're coming. My right-hand man is my flagger, which is a huge thing for me. I'll do some moans, and I'll try to get with people who are actually real good at calling. And once I get closer, we'll tone it down, and that's when I can start doing the moans and the small clucks.
Your murmurs.
And things like that. Yeah, the murmurs, just something that if they're starting to circle, to bring them back. That flag also comes in a huge thing right there.
Now, with geese, is it similar to calling ducks in the sense that not how you make the sound or anything, but I'm talking you call the wingtips and tail feathers? Is that the same?
Yeah. When they come in, I mean, when they're ready, they're ready.
They're either committed or they're not.
When the landing gear comes down, it's game over for them.
Yeah. That's the best sign, man. When they're all bowed up and them feet come down and spread out, oh, that's just the best sign, and they're hanging there.
They're smart, and they're not so smart at the same time, because they'll drop that landing gear, and they'll make another pass after that, and you're like, well, maybe I should have shot. And then they'll come back, and you're like, all right.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, like first thing this morning, the first flock that came in, they circled around us, and then they left. They didn't put their feet down at all, so...
Yeah, it's funny, man. They react in all different ways. I've seen them, you know, we've had five guys in a blind, and, you know, we'll have a dozen or so pitch in on us. We all unload, and the dogs are fetching them up. We're reloading our guns. Like, oh, that was awesome. And we look up, and there's still two walking around in the middle of the decoys.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, holy smoke, man. It's funny. You know, they're very much like turkeys. I find that the same turkeys. They're either the smartest bird or the dumbest thing you're going to find in the
woods.
And
they're responsive. We did have a set of four come in this morning that didn't make a peep. We were all standing up talking. We just had a volley come in. And we looked up, and there was four geese coming right in, and they got us so off guard that we ended up having to, we only ended up getting two out of the four, so.
It's funny, a minute ago, when I first asked you about the calling, you immediately went to your right-hand man being your flagger. And if you don't know what he's talking about, the use of motion decoys in waterfowling is really important. You know, in duck hunting, I think a lot of people are familiar with the Mojos. And different rigs, different brands make them. But with goose hunting, it's a little bit different. When he says a flagger, it's basically like a kite on an umbrella stick.
Yep.
And it looks like the wings of a goose. And you just you're flagging that thing and flailing about with that when they're a mile and a half away. Am I nuts?
Yep. And then, you know, like this morning, we had one single come in, and it was quite a ways out. We hit the flag a couple times. It turned in and went to turn away again. I hit the flag one more time. We didn't even have to make a peep. It came right into the spread. No problem. Never had a chance.
See, I'm the worst caller in my group, so I'm the flapper guy and the flagger guy. So it made me feel good. You seem to speak of that role in a positive fashion, because I've always thought it was like, okay, you can't do anything here, just stand there, pull the string and flap this flag.
Yep. And mine's right on my hand. I got a nice little slot on my layout blind. I can put my hand out, and if they start going real far away, I'll actually stand right up and I'll hold that thing right up in the air.
Now, obviously Canada geese are the main thing. Sometimes you'll see lesser Canadians mixed in with that. I don't know the difference between a young greater or a mature lesser?
Yeah, they're usually it's just the size. I mean, as far as everything goes, we did get two lessers on my first hunt of the year. That was on the second. And I took a youth hunter out. It was his first hunt. And birds just, they worked perfectly. They came in. I just let them touch the ground. I said, all right, take them.
Are there any other type of geese that might find their way scooting through?
I have rarely heard, but specks every now and again. And then, of course, we got our snow geese that come in later in the year.
Yeah, that's a tough crack, man. I mean, have you ever hunted them?
Targets of opportunity.
Yeah, that's...
You get one in a flock of Canadas, and it's everybody's targeting that one bird.
Same here, man. Yeah, that poor thing. It comes in, and five guys will put 3.5-inch BBs.
Yeah.
Right at this thing. Yeah, I've seen them in that situation. You know, I lived on Canisius Lake for many years, so I would see that magical two or three non-consecutive days a year when there'll be hundreds, if not thousands, of them on Canisius Lake. And I watch the hunting shows, but it seems like that's a whole nother set of equipment you need.
That's very, very expensive to get into.
Yeah.
It's mostly filling it. And then you can hunt them with electronic calls and motion and just about anything you can get your hands on, you can hunt them with.
Do you ever see swans? This time of year when you've been out in the field?
Honey Oil Lake
has
one swan, and it's not a fan of people. I'll just tell you that. It's not a fan of people.
Go ahead.
He's mean.
I know that swan from fishing. It's almost as mean as the swan that lives in Devil's Cove in Irondequoit Bay. Now, that one can be very aggressive and ornery. What I'm getting at is it's been one of the cooler things I've seen. We've been out in the field, and you'll see a flock, a wad, a group, I don't know what you call them, a gaggle of, you know, probably 4 to 6 is as many as I've seen swans flying through. They look like jumbo jets. You know, when a Canada goose flies by. You know, it's a pretty big bird. You know, they can weigh 20 pounds, 25 pounds, a good one. But when you see one of these, a pack of swans coming through, holy smoke, man.
It's, yeah, like you said, fighter jets coming in.
And they're dead silent. Dead silent.
And they're mean. Yeah. I can't say enough about them for being mean.
Now, have you ever seen a situation when you're out scouting? Now, I've seen this while I've been deer hunting. You know, I was just curious about the natural predators of the geese because, like we pointed out, this is a nuisance part of the season. You can legally take 15 geese a man a day right now. You can hunt from 30 minutes before the sun comes up to 30 minutes after it goes down. So I immediately started to think of what are their natural predators. And the only thing that I've seen, and it was one of the coolest things I've ever witnessed in the woods, was a coyote kill a goose. Other than coyotes, what takes these things naturally?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you see a fox. I mean, there's a lot of tracks. If you go out to the south end of Hemlock or Cannadice when the water's low like it is right now, you'll find those tracks all around all the banks. And, you know, anything that can get them is going to try to. Coyotes, pretty big time, especially, but you know, your fox might get lucky every once in a while, but I can imagine the size of a fox, it would probably get beat up pretty bad by that goose if it really wanted to be.
I saw this group of three coyotes. This was just last deer season. It was late season and it was an evening hunt. In fact, all these birds pitched in on this cornfield. I was hunting a field edge this evening, and I knew I remember because I was mad because I was going to have to walk the long way to my truck because I knew the landowner would want to hunt those birds the next morning. So I was like, oh my goodness. So I'm sitting there waiting for the sun to go down, and I'm watching. There's probably 100 geese in this, let's say, 80-acre cornfield, right? And I see one dog coming up the south side of the field, one dog on the east side, one dog on the west. And they just started inching closer, and there was a bit of a swale, so the contour allowed them to come up on them. And they just sat there, and it was like in a coordinated effort. One dog broke, and then they all did, and they ran into the flock. It was chaos. Alfred Hitchcock, cackling, birds flying off everywhere. And when the dust settled, there was a coyote walking away with a goose in its mouth with the dang thing kicking away.
Those things are, when they're hungry, they're hungry. I mean, they're. I do my best to pick as many of them out as I can throughout the season. I hunt them at night.
They're ornery, man.
They'll stand the hair up on the back of your neck. You get a good pack of them out there howling at night.
And I'll tell you, man, I'm more proud of any coyote that I've ever taken because you're hunting a hunter.
Yeah, they're smart. They are really smart.
He is Billy Pulsifer. We're, believe it or not, talking waterfowl in today. I know we got on the coyote there towards the end of this segment, but we will continue the conversation next right here, 92.5 WBEE. Hey, gang, good morning. Welcome back to Taking It Outdoors, talking a little waterfowling today with our friend Billy Pulsifer. Billy's been contributing to Taking It Outdoors for many years now. We're happy to have him back in the studio with us today as we continue our conversation about early goose season. That's right. Early goose season goes until September 25th, where you have a 15 bird bag limit per man a day right now. This morning's broadcast made possible thanks to Johnson RV Country, 30 years of creating generations of family fun, and Webster Palmyra, and online at jrvcountry.com. Also, Bentley Brothers Kubota in Brockport and Albion. Save a horse, ride a Kubota. You know, Billy, I'll tell you, man, there's been days, I'm not trying to act like I'm a utopian or I'm better than anybody, but philosophically, my thing is when I kill it, I want to grill it. You know what I mean? I don't like to go out there and just kill something for the sake of killing it. We touched on coyote hunting at the end of the last segment. I've coyote hunted, and I'm conflicted on it because what do I do with this coyote after I've taken it other than taxidermy? You know what I mean?
Yeah, for me, I give him to – I got a friend. He's into trapping, and he sells the pelts, and for them now it's more a numbers thing.
I hear you, but I'm not in the fur trade, so personally I'm conflicted. And but the same when I go goose and duck hunting, you know, I have the opportunity to goose hunt way more than I do. I just like, man, what am I going to do with all this goose meat? For Pete's sake, I know I go out and I get five, you know, mine, and I'm good for a month. I've run out of ways to make goose. I force myself to eat it because I've killed it. What do you do with it all?
Either I make jerky out of it, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
And you can make, you know, five geese, so make a lot of jerky. You'll probably be good for the year. But the main thing that we do is, since we don't eat as much venison since I started duck and goose hunting.
No kid.
It's way better for our, it tastes better to us. And what we do is we take it and put it in a crock pot with a half a can of beer. We put all the traditional stew meat stuff in there and bouillon, and we let it cook from 5 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock at night, and it's just like pork. A lot of people think that it's kind of greasy, and that's kind of a big misconception out there. I mean, it is greasy, but if you cook it in a crock pot, all that fat and everything just floats to the top, and you take your spoon and scoop it right off and throw it in the garbage.
Yeah, maybe I need to be a little more adventurous with my goose recipes, because, you know, I mean, I've done the crock pot and the barbecue sauce, almost made like a pulled goose kind of a situation. I can choke that down. I make the jerky. My dog loves it, so it ends up being dog treats. But I'm always looking for new ways to use the geese that I harvest.
Just that pot roast, try it one time, yeah. And I'll get the recipe from my wife. She does it.
Deal, man. And now if we can only figure out a way to harvest the feathers for these jackets that are selling for $800-900 a pop. You've seen these, right?
I have not.
Oh my God, the Canada Goose jackets? You haven't seen them?
I haven't seen them.
Oh my God, go on. Is that computer on? You got a phone? Just look up a Canada Goose jacket, all right? And you're going to see this thing. It's just a dumb black jacket, dude, filled with Canada goose feathers, and they charge people like $900 for these things. How many of these, I mean, you could, just from what you harvested today, you got about $4,400 worth of goose stuffings there.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You thought I was kidding, didn't you?
I did, but that's... Very popular, apparently.
And you know, another popular one with those same line of jacket. It's a funny story. You know, again, this is kind of going back to the fur trader situation from a moment ago. The fur around the hood of those Canada Goose jackets, coyotes. And last year, those jackets got so popular, or maybe it was 2 years ago. Yes, it was 2 years ago. I learned this from this fur trader guy from Gasport, right? He's big into the fur trade. So they were making them with Western coyotes, and they ran out. There was such a demand for these jackets, they exhausted their resources of coyotes for the hood trimmings on these. And they went to the Eastern coyote, and it jacked up the price per pelt in our region. I think it was 2 years ago. Probably not last year, but 2 years ago. It's crazy what they're getting for those things, man.
Yeah, I'm surprised that the Easterns weren't worth more to begin with just because they're thicker.
Yeah.
Prairie ones.
They were the primary number one choice, but it's not like they were going to say, hey, we're not selling you these jackets for $900.
Right, yeah.
Who cares? I do want to budget some time to talk about concealment when it comes to waterfowl hunting. You got to consider here that these birds are looking at you basically... It's been told to me, I gotta consider I'm being looked at through binoculars.
Yeah, essentially. Especially with these resident geese here in the early season. They've been to this field. They know what's there and what's supposed to be there. So to stand out even just a little bit is going to be, they're going to know. They're just going to know.
And a big mistake I've seen a lot of guys make, including myself years ago, you get into waterfowl hunt and you're like, all right, I'm going to take the next step. You start to get some gear. You go on Craigslist, or maybe you go down and buy one new, but you get your layout blind. You pull it right out of the box and you take it to the field. Mistake number one. Tell people why.
Well, this morning we had a brand new blind in the field, and first couple birds flared, and I got out and I got to looking at our blinds from a distance, and I said, oh, that one's pretty shiny. I said, when'd you get that? He said, I got it last night. I walked right over. I don't know if he was mad at me or not, but I started taking handfuls of mud and rubbing it all over it. He said, no, you're fine.
Yeah, you got to wash them up, man. And by wash them up, I mean you get a 5-gallon bucket and a shovel load of dirt, and you fill that bucket with water, and you just start smearing mud and caking it all over this thing. The idea is, as it's been explained to me, we're cutting down on reflection.
Exactly.
Of a synthetic material in a natural situation. Exactly.
One of my blinds that's out there is pretty new, and the other one is really beat up and old. And the one that's beat up and old will definitely put more birds on the ground than the newer one, just because it doesn't have that glare.
Now, as I look out at yours, I see real corn stalks on your blinds. And a lot of guys I know, they'll spend the money on the fake grass that they'll sell at the store, and they'll put all that on there. I've seen guys do a mix of fake concealment, grass, reeds, whatever you want. But you really, I mean, let me ask, I'm about to do that thing where I make a statement as a question. But do you need to tailor your layout blind to where you're hunting?
Absolutely. I couldn't hunt a hay field yesterday and then went to a cornfield and blended in. Now, there's kind of like a catch-22 to that, because if you wanted to hunt a hay field and you were to use that hay and you gave it a few weeks to dry out and turn brown, you could still use that in a cornfield, because there is, you know, there's weeds and stuff like that that end up dying in the cornfield. So it still blends in pretty good. But I always try to pull from the natural surroundings, as long as you're not breaking any laws or if the farmer doesn't mind. And if they're cutting the corn anyways and they miss some, by all means, use it up, because, I mean, they're not going to use it. So,
heck, I've even picked the corn and left it sitting there, took the stalk before.
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
know if that's ethical, but, you know, I didn't want to be a thief.
If you leave the corn there, then the geese will come in for it. So,
absolutely. Billy, we got one more segment to go. Our guest in studio, Billy Pulsifer, he's been helping us out here at Taking It Outdoors for a long time, and we're grateful to have him with us today as we have conversation about early Canada goose season. Again, you need your license, you need your federal duck stamp, and do not forget to get your HIP number, your Harvest Information Program number, and you can do that on the New York State DEC's website. Early season goes until the 25th, and then I think duck season begins just before Halloween, the 27th. Yep, and then that'll run through, again, depending on if you're in the south or west central zone, through second week in December, we'll say, roughly. One more segment to go, and that is next. This is Taking It Outdoors on 92.5 WBEE. Hey, folks, good morning. Welcome back to Taking It Outdoors. This is a great time of year to do a show like this, because everything's coming together. Goose season is going on. Waterfowl season is a little over a month away. Bow season starts on October 1st. The salmon are staging. They're making their way to the streams and tribs. Then the brown trout are right behind them. Fall bass fishing is world class in our area. It's, man, this is a great time of year.
This is the outdoorsman's time of year.
Yeah, man.
Overall.
It's what it's all about, and we're in here talking about it instead of being out there doing it. Our guest in studio today is Billy Pulsifer. We're having a conversation about waterfowling, mainly talking about the Canada goose season, the differences between your approach early in the year versus regular season later on in the dead of winter. And it's been cool learning the little subtleties that can help you make you a little more successful this time of year. I want to talk some ammunition, Billy. I know a lot of it depends on your situation, the circumstances, when it comes to making ammunition choices, but there's a broad spectrum applied to a variety of situations. So let's just kind of go through that spectrum. Let's start at the muscle end of things and work our way down. What's the biggest waterfowl load? Is that a T?
There is something bigger. I think it's an F. But
I never heard of an F.
There is an F. I don't know anybody who shoots it. I really don't. But T, I hear a lot of people shooting that, and then triple B is fairly common right behind T.
Yeah, do you ever monkey with that? Normally, I'm a BB guy. That's BBs and fours if I'm duck hunting.
Yep, BBs and twos for me pretty much all season long.
Yeah, and I only did that because the guys who I learned from did that. So I've never really shot a broad, you know, a variety of them to say, hey, this is the best. That's just all I know.
It's, you know, there's a lot to be said. A lot of people have their specific ones that they really like. Typically, I never even shoot BB. This is my first year really getting into BB. And have I noticed a huge difference? No, not really. The biggest difference is there's 81 pellets in BB, depending on the cartridge. And then you're going at, I think, up to about 104 once you hit number two shot. So it kind of does make your pattern a little bit bigger. So I usually start with a number two, and then I'll chase it with BB and the rest of my, for the remainder ammo on my gun, because we don't have a plug-in this season. For the early season.
Whoa, say what?
So you can have up to however many rounds your shotgun can hold in the early season. You don't have to have a plug-in.
I didn't know that. Are you kidding me, dude?
Nope. So I like mine will hold three or six 3-inch shells. So
no way, dude. So you got the finisher round at the end?
There's six
the
rounds.
The close range?
Yeah, I mean 15 birds. You only get three volleys in a day and you're trying to get a limit. Every shot counts. Yeah. So.
Oh man, I didn't even think of that. That can get expensive.
It does. you get a really good flock that's patterning really well, and you're constantly getting shots. And if you're not a really good shot, it's going to cost you a lot of more money.
Yeah.
Or if you're chasing cripples down, I like to wait till they're close. I hate chasing cripples. I chased one today, and I hated it.
Man, you don't have a dog?
I do. He would get beat up pretty bad. He's a little small. He's about 45 pounds or so. He's my duck dog. Plus, on land, he does what he wants. He just takes right off. On water, he always comes back.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I got a stubborn dog myself. You know, she's just like the person training her. You know, she'll bring back a duck. It's not pretty. But a goose, she'll get right up to it. And I'm like, so proud. Look at my dog. And then she just starts growling and barking at it. She will not pick the thing up, man. And I won't do the force fetch. I'm a little bit of a bleeding heart in that regard. So I just figure she'll learn it when she's ready. I'm not a world-class duck hunter. I don't need a world-class dog.
That's a lot of things. Everybody wants these championship dogs. But how many of us are really doing championship things with them?
Yeah, no.
I mean, getting the duck or the goose and getting it back to the blind is... That's it. And then if you praise them enough, they're going to want to do it.
God, and part of the fun is wading out to my spot. Like, I love to take her to the Kenesha Swamp south of the lake. You know what I mean? I can go there in the middle of the day. There's not a lot of pressure there. Mm-hmm. And, oh, my God, we get to wading through there. And we're in, you know, chest-deep water. And, oh, my God, black lab. So she's in hog heaven, man. She loves to go do that. But once it comes time for a goose, man, she's like, you go get it, Jack. I don't know what it is. I think early on I scared the crap out of her with a dead one. I exposed her to one too early in my training. Mm-hmm. With her, again, novice mistakes, but that's on me, not the dog. What kind of gun do you shoot? You a 12 gauge, 20 gauge?
I primarily like to shoot a 20 gauge for ducks,
man. And I hear that most often. Am I wasting my time with the 12?
Absolutely not. The only reason a lot of people like the 20 gauges, they're usually smaller framed. There's less recoil. It's easier for your follow-up shots. And they just tend to swing really, really well.
Yeah.
Now, I got a chance. I just got back from training. I was in Fort Benning for a month, and I went down there, and I shot sporting clades while I was there. And they had an over-under Satori, and I shot a full 100 rounds with it, and I loved every second of it. It's a double-barrel over-under, but it was just... It was an absolute pleasure to shoot, and I think I only missed like 10 or so, you know, and it was a lot of comfortable. It swung really well, and it was real lightweight.
Yeah, well, they better be accurate with only two shots in there.
And the price tag on them, they should almost just, the ducks should just fall down when they see it.
No kidding, man. So. Yeah, no, I know guys that spend a lot of money. You know, they got the Benellis and the different high-end guns like that. And they're great. They're beautiful. They're awesome pieces of equipment. But I kill the same birds with my Mossberg 935.
I've got them. I've pretty much my 20-gauge and my 12-gauge are both Mossberg 500s.
Yeah.
And they work.
And my 935 was, I got a Christmas bonus, and I said, I'm upgrading. So I went from an 835 to a 935. I just went from pump to semi. And, yeah. But that's it, man. I use that bird or gun for turkey, for waterfowl.
No, but a lot of the semi-autos, I know that they have issues cycling 2 3/4. My Stoger was one for that. Pretty much anything that had a recoil reduction system in it will have trouble with those 2 3/4. Yeah. So.
Well, mine says on it for 3 3.5-inch shells only. My pump, my 835, would shoot anything.
Anything
they sold. It didn't matter what it was, it would shoot it. But the other one, it says on there, it doesn't say don't waste your time with anything smaller than 3, but it should. Absolutely. Well, man, I want to wish you well. Do you do much whitetail, Billy?
I've got a lot of videos I filmed. I did a lot of bow hunting. I don't really rifle hunt anymore. But I got to tell you, I stepped down quite a bit from over the last couple of years and with duck hunting coming in the Finger Lakes. I grew up north, and it's wildly different down here. But I do a lot of archery hunting.
Yeah, the it's cool, man. I know a lot of guys, once they get turned on to waterfowling and they start to get a little successful at it, they make the full switch over. One, it's more social. You don't have to sit there and be still and quiet the entirety of the time. So there's usually good conversation, some coffee, some chop busting.
Bacon and eggs on the grill. You can't do that in the deer stand.
Yeah, I don't have to take a special shower or take 2 hours to get ready like I'm going to prom like I do when I bow hunt. Because I do the whole nine yards. You know what I mean?
I do the same thing. All my stuff is still vacuum sealed in a bag.
Yeah, man. You go out the duck blind, you can smell like bacon and eggs at the diner and maybe spill some diesel fuel on you.
Yep.
The birds don't care,
they
man.
They don't care.
Well, man, I want you to, number one, be safe when you get out in the field. And I certainly thank you for your time coming in here today. We're always appreciative of it, and we learn a lot. Again, Billy Pulsifer is our guest. I'm sure our paths will cross again as we go through the season. I want to thank you for your time, Billy, and thank everyone for listening today. I'll be back tomorrow morning with TJ Sharp and Steve Houseman with the Bee Morning Coffee Club. The countdown is next. Have a blessed day.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.